Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Friends, it's been a very long week. Hope you have good plans for the weekend. I know we have a lot of people had Monday off because of the holiday, but later on in the show we'll get to the grab a pencil portion. But I want to give you a little background on how the last week has been. Last Friday, after recording the show, I went home and treated myself to the commentary tracks and special features of the Criterion release of John Waters' Pink Flamingos, much needed after a long week before that. Of course, Criterion has a 50% off sale at a certain store. You know what I'm talking about. So it's running through July. So I was on the air every day this week, which is fine. It's the job, from 10 to 4, and sometimes you're on holidays, which is what I'm doing. And then in the evenings, I've been rehearsing, and I'm directing a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is running at Arts for Lawrence. It's part of Indie Bard Fest, July 21st through the 24th. It's a free show. You can go to Arts for Lawrence website or IndieBardFest.com for ticket information and all other info. But it's going to be an outdoor, festive, fun evening of Shakespeare. So Monday, I'm in studio on the air, and from 10 to 4, that's normal gig. And I got a screener of the Gabby Giffords documentary because, of course, this week she also kind of done by CNN Films also kind of coincides with her getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And then July 4th happened. I watched the film and then the news of the shooting in Highland Park. So between that and R.V. Wade and watching Citizen Ruth, it's just been a long week. And it's also been a very hot week when we were rehearsing indoors and outdoors for Midsummer. So, and the Gabby Giffords documentary, I'll talk about next week because it is opening next week at the Can-Can. And Keystone Arts up in the Landmark Cinema are going to have a special presentation of it, a special screening of it as well. And I wanted this week's show to have a lighter note in lieu of all things. And I want to thank Ryan Harrison for providing that for me for this week's show. Ryan Harrison is the writer, director, star, kind of a little bit of everything of the film Ninja Badass, which is now out on home video. It is it's out by Bayview Home Video, and Ryan is originally from Indiana. He's originally from Indianapolis, and now living in California. But Ninja Badass has been deemed the perfect midnight movie, and I reviewed this film a couple of weeks ago, where I admit I watched it in the daytime. I had no beer, I had no pizza, and I should correct that the next time, which is probably what I'm going to do this weekend. But anyway, there's a commentary track and a couple special features on the Blu-ray. But earlier this week, I got to sit down with Ryan Harrison, and this film captures the tone of the even more ridiculous than Shaw Brothers martial arts films. So anyway, I talked with Ryan Harrison this week about Ninja Badass, about his own history with martial art films and filming a martial arts film in Indiana. So crack one open, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Joining me on Film Sociology, the star, the writer, the director, the caterer, the thong wearer of the film Ninja Badass, Ryan Harrison. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I love that description of me. Thank you so
much. It's a, well, you kind of asked for it. It's in the ad campaign, man.
Right, yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, writer, director, editor, VFX. I mean, some people like that about the movie. Some people don't. But, yeah, you know, it just is what it is. I like doing everything, and so I did everything.
I mean, you could do a pseudonym, but I mean, you know, the first time I came across somebody who had more than just the two or three credits was somebody like Robert Rodriguez, who would edit his own stuff. And you know, some directors that take a cinematography credit. So, you know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah. Like that zombie movie that Zack Snyder just did, he was the DP on it. So,
right.
You know, if he can do it.
Yes, and here's hoping you never have to use Alan Smithy.
I feel like that'd be worse.
It would be. So let folks know, I got to watch this, and if there is a definition of a midnight movie, I think Ninja Badass is it. But would you share with the audience the saga of Ninja Badass?
Yeah, as far as making it.
Well, it's the story itself. Then we'll get into making it.
So, yeah, the story itself, it's pretty simple. You know, it's like a small, normal Indiana guy sees this hot girl, and she's super hot, and he wants to date her. And then she gets kidnapped by a ninja cult.
As one would do.
Who wants to eat her. And then he gets trained by a ninja sensei in the woods and tries to save her. You know, that's the premise, basically.
Yes.
That's how I would describe it.
Yes, it's a love story with lots of ninja training and fighting.
Right, yeah. And there's, you know, explosions and nudity and launchers and all kinds of other crazy stuff. But the basic premise is, you know, a guy's trying to, you know, court this young lady. A young gentleman is trying to court a young lady.
It's a rite of passage. It is a sign of maturity. And, you know, and if he plays his cards right, he can move out of mom's house. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's the premise, yeah. But then, you know, there's all the wild stuff, so there's, you know, normal people trying to be ninjas and crazy superpowers and music, and there's a pig and cows and
a lot of food.
Yeah, a lot of food. A lot of China Buffet. I'm a big China Buffet fan.
I
always go to China Buffet everywhere in Indiana. You know, I went to school at IU in Bloomington.
Okay, I was going to...
Yeah, there are like three China buffets. Like me and one of my friends, we would always like hit these different China buffets. But yeah.
Oh sure, I went to Ball State, and there was a place that I would go to on Sundays. And eventually, after I graduated and I needed work, I wound up working there for a while. So, you know, it's all good. So you went. I was going to ask about the Indiana connection. So you went to IU. Do you have family here as well?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I grew up in Indianapolis.
Okay.
On the west side of Indy. And, I went to IU in Bloomington. And, like, my grandma lived in Muncie. I have relatives who live in, like, Fort Wayne or Bluffton. They live in Bluffton. And then after college, I moved to Vegas. I lived there a couple years. I worked on a vampire movie called The Revenant. Not the Leonardo DiCaprio one. But
right. I saw the pictures.
An independent one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I loved. It was amazing. The guy that did the Silver Spheres and Phantasm 2 through 4.
Yeah.
He was the director of that movie.
Oh.
So I learned a lot of VFX from him. I mean, the thing that sucks about Ninja Badass is, like, there are all these, like, over-the-top VFX where there's, like, blood going everywhere. But then there's, like, subtle VFX where there's, like, cows in the distance that weren't there. Or, you know, a pig that just happens to be on set, but he's not actually there. So there's, like, subtle stuff. So that's the good VFX that I learned from that guy. Well, and then I moved to L.A. and then, yeah.
Okay. Well, no, funny you mentioned that. One of my all-time favorite CGI moments was when Ang Lee was directing Sense and Sensibility, and he felt the sky didn't have enough clouds. So he added clouds.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But
there's all kinds of subtle stuff you can do and should do, really.
Right. Yeah. But in the, yeah, and this what you I you do have the visual effects tradition of somebody getting you know shot through the body, and there's one splurt of blood and that's it. But you know, you work with what you have.
yeah, 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 and you know, I didn't want to get blood all over like my grandma's house or something. So you know, you have to like do CG stuff. You know, because you know, I saved up my own money to make the movie. So you know, I paid the actors, you know, a small fee, and like most of the locations were free. So it was just like there was one house that we rented, and then the different rooms were like the different locations. Even for like the inside of the trailer, like Rex's room, that was just a room in a house. It wasn't even at the trailer in the trailer park. Or we used my grandma's house. And you know, I watched like the director's commentary for Snatch, the movie Snatch, from the 90s.
Guy Ritchie.
And like, they were saying, like Guy Ritchie, yeah, and Matthew Vaughn. Yeah, I think Matthew Vaughn was saying, like, you just got to find a room to put actors in and you just got to film it. Like, we don't have any money. And so, like, if those dudes say that, you know, I figured, well, I should do that too.
Hey.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's the kind of I've first two plays I directed cost a combined $200, and it was I was kind of miffed because that required buying paint, but I made money both times, and it so I was actually able to tell Roger Corman, who I always used as an influence of beg, borrow, and steal. So you know, you do what you have to do. So where all in Indiana did you shoot? Because there's a number of towns, so we got to represent the Indiana Film Committee. Film scene.
So, like, even it's crazy because, like, people who are from Indiana, they recognize some of the places.
Oh, sure.
Like, the strip mall, it's in Avon, and you know, outside of Indy. And then the China Buffet, it's not there anymore, actually. I think they, like, totally bulldozed it.
Oh.
It went out of business, and then they just, like, demolished the building. But that was on the south side of Indy. The house that we rented, where it's, like, the backyard scenes, too, that was on the north side of Indy. And then, we shot at a motel that cannot be named.
Why can't it be named?
They didn't want us to say what it was. They didn't want us to use the name or like say where it was or thank them. So whatever. But that was you just keep driving north on 69 or whatever.
Okay, all right. We'll just.
It's in Huntington, I think.
Oh, okay, that's good. I wasn't going to pry any further, but that's all right.
And then, like, yeah, the farm with the cows, that was up around there, too. And then my grandma's house was in Muncie. So that's also, like, outside the garage. We're just, like, all over, you know. It'd be, like, a two-hour drive, you know, from Indy in the Ninja Van, Indianapolis to, you know, the final fight scene. So if you pay attention in the movie, you can also notice that, you know, the seasons tend to change in some of the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there'll be like leaves on the trees in one shot, and no leaves in the next shot. So that's because we just had to like, there was like the fall of 2015 when we were shooting most of it, and then we just had to stop because there was snow on the ground, and then come back the next year, in like more towards the summer. So, yeah.
Hey, at least it's not Ed Wood where it's, you know, daytime in one scene and then, you know, cut to nighttime. So it's okay.
Yeah.
If
you gotta do what you gotta do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess also with this, what is your personal history with your path with martial arts films?
Well, I'm a huge fan.
Obviously.
I love Hong Kong action movies. You know, I love American Ninja. That's definitely a big influence. Indian action movies, I'm a huge fan now. That's more of a recent thing for me. But they're amazing. Like even from like the 80s until like now, they're just like crazy over the top.
Yep.
Like, in everything that they do. Yeah, Hong Kong action movies like Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan and Yuen Biu, however you say his name.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cynthia Rothrock, Don the Dragon Wilson. Yeah, I love like the quote unquote janky, you know, straight to VHS movies from or DVD, you know, from the 90s and 2000s. Like, you know, Don the Dragon Wilson had like Blood Fist 1-8.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so that's primarily like the Hong Kong action movies are my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
With Sammo Hung, especially.
Well, and he was one, I mean, that also integrated a lot of physical comedy. I mean, to a certain degree, Jackie Chan did, but I think also he knew he was large and he just worked with what he had.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I love that because it just makes it seem like a real person doing it because he's not, you know, he doesn't look like Jackie Chan or like Bruce Lee or something.
Correct.
You know, he's this big dude. So, yeah, I guess that's also an influence on the movie with, like, Big Tweety. Like, I didn't want to get people that look like martial artists or martial artists. I wanted it to be more just, like, normal people that kind of, I don't know.
For the people.
Yeah, just normal people, and they figure out some ninja magic and...
yep.
Some things happen.
So... what high school did you go to?
I went to Brebeuf on the north side.
Okay. What was your video store? Where was the place that you rode, walked, drove to get the Cynthia Rothrock rentals?
I don't know. I mean, I guess growing up, I wasn't like super into those movies. I was like more watching like Natural Born Killers and stuff, but it'd be like a Blockbuster in Speedway.
Okay.
With my video store growing up. Or there was one, like, on Rockville Road. Like, I lived on Rockville Road. It was, like, right down the street. I was a big video game fan, too. I still am. So there's a lot of video game references probably in the movie. And anime, you know.
Right. And, yeah, there is, yeah, watching this, there are that aspects of, yeah, anime and video game and martial arts. And I think you covered as many kind of martial art plot lines, you know, as one does. The love slash rescue, the training, an admirer who becomes your enemy, you know, a fight in the middle to help set up the climax fight at the end. You know, all of those kind of, and the tone of it is spot on. It's heightened and silly, of course, but it's not inconsistent. This is definitely a few beers and pizza evening fodder.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it follows the structure. You know, I'm not totally nuts. You know, I was trying to nail the correct structure and everything. You know, I do like all kinds of classes for screenwriting and acting and sketch and improv just all the time trying to get better. And I'm definitely way better now at writing and everything than I was like 7 years ago. But yeah.
So I guess you alluded to it earlier. What was the timeline between when you started and when you finished? I know you had to have some delays, but including those, how long did it take?
So I guess like 15 years since when I started writing it. You know, I started writing it in like 2007. That's when I graduated from IU. And it was a lot of different movie back then. But then, I eventually rewrote it. And then I just saved up money. You know, I was living in L.A., working in the trailer industry, the movie trailer industry. And eventually I saved up enough money in 2015. I took some people from L.A. with me. One of the dudes, Daryl Delaney, he shot it. Another guy that plays Kano, Mitch Schlegel, and everyone's from the Midwest, too. It's kind of cool. Because, like, Daryl and Mitch, I met them in L.A. in an improv class. But Daryl's from Ohio, and Mitch is from Michigan. So, you know, we went back to Indiana. And that was in fall of 2015 when we shot most of the movie. And then, yeah, we had to abandon it because of snow. So then the fall of 2016, we shot the rest of it. And then I did the editing and VFX at night after working at my day job, which was, my day job. It's like a creative director of a trailer house. So that's like 50 to 100 hours a week work. But, so, you know, I'd come home and try and edit at night or on the weekends. And that's tough because, like, you're doing it during the day. So it was tough. But, you know, I did that until, like, 2019. I started submitting to film festivals and got rejected by a whole lot of them because that's just kind of how it goes.
Right.
Definitely, you know, Sundance and all the big ones. I submitted to those, like, multiple times, multiple years, got rejected. And then it started getting to some, got into the first film festival right before the pandemic. So that was like January of 20, whenever the pandemic started.
Right.
I don't know. And then that sucked because, you know, the pandemic, you know, all the film festivals got like canceled or they went online.
Yep.
And then that was like a 2 year or a year and a half kind of thing. The being in film festivals that no one really shows up to, kind of. But it was great at the end of it. We got into a really big one called Nightmares in Ohio, which is awesome. I totally recommend everyone go to it because that was a wonderful experience. And then we got into an Italian film festival where we showed it in this like village like in northern Italy. And we went over there. I took my mom. We went over there. And it was just dope. Like they subtitled it in Italian. And it was like in this little village thing, like next to Slovenia, like on the border. I didn't even have a passport, so I got a passport so I could go and stuff. And like in the like the town square or whatever, like you look up and there's a castle, and then you look down and there's like this little movie theater, and that's where the film festival was.
It was your Cinema Paradiso moment.
Yeah, I guess so. Did that, and then I got a producer's rep and a distributor, and then so the movie just came out like a month ago. It was I booked a theater here. It's called Lemley, and then for a week, and you know it's on Blu-ray now online, and you can see it somewhere online too.
Streaming. Yep, it's on. It's on Bayview. I believe Bayview Productions, as far as the Blu-ray, and it's got a bunch of goodies on there. And you know what was fun to see in the trailer were every festival has their little festival logo and saying it played here and it played there. So you and the fact that you got a film that's in Italy, and I am reminded of Fred the Hammer Williamson, who when work started to dry up in the United States, he started producing and directing films in Italy and appearing in them. So every connection, every connection you make, it grows.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. Maybe Ninja Badass 2 will just all be in Italian. me going to Italy.
You never know. You can find some Morricone-esque score or, a lot of extreme close-ups, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's another big influence, at the end, some of the shots is totally like a Sergio Leone. Once Upon a Time in the West is like one of my all-time favorites.
Love Once Upon a Time in the West. And, of course, for now we're going to film splain because the Seven Samurai was the Magnificent Seven and Yojimbo is Fistful of Dollars and all that. So it's all connected. It's all good.
Right, yeah.
I wanted to see you if you could break down the Indiana ninja scene. This is an aspect of the state I knew nothing about until your film.
The Indiana ninja scene.
Well, yeah, because
there's real truth to if there are ninjas in Indiana. I mean, the movie's not real. You get that right?
Are you okay? Well, have you seen some of the news items that's come out the last couple of years?
I don't know.
John F. Kennedy Jr.'s coming back.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what the Indiana ninja scene is. I mean, I don't know anything about actual martial arts. I've never actually done a class or anything. I'm just a fan. I like Power Rangers. I like people punching each other and explosions. I couldn't even... It was tough casting, kind of, because I think I did try and find people that could do flips and stuff, and I could never really get anybody. I was posting like Craigslist ads and stuff, and I love the cast. The cast is amazing.
All right.
But as far as like getting other crew or any kind of like strange talent, I think I just wasn't really tapped into it. Like I probably could have, if I would have had the presence of mind or whatever, I could have like reached out to like martial arts schools or like the IU or something and gotten some people who could flip around. But the only person that really flips around in the movie is like the daughter of one of the location owners. We got a shot of her flipping. I think it's in the credits.
Well, that's good. You utilize everyone's strengths. So.
Yeah, so that's the martial arts community that I found in Indiana with the girl that does gymnastics.
I like the idea of Indiana ninjas because it sounds, if you know the Blues Brothers, it's right up there with Illinois Nazis.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, rent it sometime. It's okay. So, Ryan, I know this one's been out for a while, and I know it's just coming out on video. What is the next epic that you're going to make?
I don't know. I really want to make a mutant bodybuilding movie, which is about as much about bodybuilders as my ninja movie is about ninjas. So
I won't ask about the
Ninja Badass, so.
I won't ask about the Indiana bodybuilding scene.
And it would be set in Indiana still. Like, I feel like everything I will make will be set in Indiana, because it's like, you know, it's in my head.
Yep.
I grew up there, and I just imagine things there. It just seems more real.
More down home.
So it's kind of a similar story. It's like it's an amateur bodybuilder. He wants to become a champion, so he starts mutating his body. Kind of. I don't want to get into the details.
No, of course. Yeah.
That'd be something. And then I'm trying to like write on shows and stuff. You know, I'm trying to get a manager, and I just want to make stuff and get better at making stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you get a chance, there is, of course, the 1977 documentary Pumping Iron that introduced a lot of people to Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno and Franco Colombo. But I got a feeling you have the mutant films down, so you're ready there.
Yeah. I also love bodybuilding. I've been trying to get big. You know, I went to Mr. Olympia last fall, just as a fan. So I met like Ronnie Coleman. And I actually did a trailer for the re-release of Pumping Iron. I edited it
while
I was at the trailer house that I worked at, called Tiny Hero, by the way. I love Pumping Iron. I love Arnold. I love bodybuilding. I love people hitting each other. I love all of it. All the masculine testosterone. I love monster trucks. I just applied to be a monster truck host. Just trying everything.
You're a young man, so you know keep shooting for the stars there.
I'm trying.
I know. All right. So Ryan, on social media, where can people find you so they can find out more about Ninja Badass and all your other projects?
Well, the movie website's ninjabadassmovie.com. On Facebook, you can search for Ninja Badass. Instagram, I am Rex the Ninja Dude. And there's also a Ninja Badass Movie Instagram page. And I think that's it. I mean, it's Ninja Badass on YouTube. You can see the trailer. Leave a nice review, please, for anyone who's listening. Even if you haven't seen the movie, please leave a nice review on anything. That'd be nice.
It goes a long way.
The rough thing with film puzzles is, like, you just have this slow drag, to quote my own movie, you have a slow drag across all these film festivals, and then like people see it, and you know you're at the film festivals, and like people come up to you and they're like, oh, the movie's amazing, I love it, and then you know 2 years later when it comes out, like those people aren't gonna write a review, like they've already seen the movie 2 years ago. So yeah, it's just one of the gripes that I have with film festivals, even though I love them.
It's a necessary thing, I guess.
Yeah, it's just part of the game.
That's all right.
But yeah, please leave a nice review.
All right, Ryan, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you also representing Indiana filmmaking with Ninja Badass, which is out on Bayview on Blu-ray. And Ryan, we'll keep in touch, and can't wait to see the next epic.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
There you go, friends. That's Ryan Harrison, the writer, director, star of Ninja Badass, which is now out on Bayview Home Video. Go look for it. It is, you don't have to watch it at midnight, but it helps. You don't have to have beer and pizza with you, but, you know, that's your own choice. But anyway, you get the idea. So if you love over-the-top martial arts and silliness, and it's shot in Indiana. So there you go. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah, let's look for Ninja Badass on Bayview Home Video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I'm going to go through a couple titles that I watched recently. We have some dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And then we'll get to the grab a pencil portion of the show. Three videos from three very good documentaries from Kino Lorber Home Video have just been released recently. The music documentary Stay Prayed Up, which follows Lena Mae Perry, age 83, or as we like to call it, 83. and her band, her gospel band, the Branchettes. And in the process, at 83 years old, recording her first fully live gospel album. So this film goes back and forth between the history of Ms. Perry's career and the band's, as well as the making of the album. A younger album producer, a young guitarist who grew up in Wisconsin and went to, as he describes it, bland church, and how Sister Act became an influence. So it's a nice look at her, at Lena Mae's life and her work and her family and her church, which is sometimes all interwoven one in the same. So, if you dig something like Amazing Grace, well, this is the process of it. So Stay Prayed Up is out on Kino Lorber. Also in pretty good time, or a timely line, is the documentary Accepted, which was about the non-traditional prep school in Louisiana that got a lot of notoriety and appeared on a lot of talk shows and news coverage, and talk shows like Ellen, because they had these famous videos of everybody gathered around a laptop to find out if so-and-so has been accepted to college. And this is a family where the average family income is $32,000. There's only $675 a month for tuition. And the school has a 100% acceptance rate. 32% of those get accepted to Ivy League schools. And so we have a teacher who sounds a lot like a motivator, preacher, football coach. And everything seems to be going swimmingly until there is a New York Times article that exposes treatments of the students, falsifying transcripts, made up student accomplishments, and just some unpleasantness. And so the first half of the film has this kind of inspirational story, and there are also moments as you're watching like, this is too good to be true. And then the second half, the bottom drops out. Students get out of the school, try to distance themselves. The school distances them. They circle the wagons. And this is all before Operation Varsity Blues. So the fact that these were mostly minority kids, but the celebrities and the white kid, you know, the white kids, especially with the very rich parents, they get all of the kind of focus when it comes to their college admission scandal. So good/bad timing, but a fascinating look, and also the fact that the filmmakers are involved in. I shouldn't say involved, not in a Michael Moore sense, but there is a riveting moment where, you know, the filmmakers have been following the school for a while, and then they're not even allowed into graduation commencement. So anyway, one word, kind of unfortunate timing for them, but as an audience member, riveting timing. So look for the documentary Accepted from Kino Lorber. Oh, and finally from Kino Lorber is Museum Town, about the Museum of Contemporary Art happening in a small Massachusetts town. This film is partially narrated by Meryl Streep and shows the history of North Adams, Massachusetts, one time a mill town that is closed, the one company town, and once it goes away, the town dies. And this becomes the place to have contemporary avant-garde art. We see the early stages of planning. The former mayor, who kind of helps plant the seed of having this contemporary museum in a dying small town. excuse me. And then as it goes on, it's where at times the museum flourishes, but the rest of the town doesn't. There is some really cool artwork. If you enjoy contemporary art, there is a lot of great representation of this. Besides the history of the museum and the town, we also get to see the museum employees working with an artist on their latest exhibit that's going to be hung in the museum. We also get artists like even David Byrne and Laurie Anderson, and it becomes also a music venue. Although in the case of Burns and Anderson's, there it's a more art exhibit. We get a look of an ugly lawsuit between an artist and an exhibit versus the museum, and the fact that the exhibit by a particular artist is not fully put up, and that becomes an ugly lawsuit. But it's still a thing of, and this reminded me of my hometown of Flint, Michigan, when they tried to do the same thing, but it wasn't Mass MoCA, it was Auto World. didn't last long. But it talks, you know, just the fact that we have this museum that's doing well, but the rest of the town is still kind of struggling. Even small businesses, local businesses, which are one or two blocks away, but they're still off campus. So anyway, if you're in the small town business life or into contemporary art or museums, check out the documentary Museum Town, courtesy of Kino Lorber. Okay, friends, before we get to grab a pencil, we're going to go, well, round the horn, then grab a pencil. We have dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And I want to talk about these gentlemen first before we get to James Caan. Peter Brook, the famed stage director, who also had a handful of films of serious note. He did the 1963 film version of Lord of the Flies, which I believe is on Criterion. Marat Saad from 1967. And I've seen a few clips, and I would like to watch the whole thing if you get a chance. The 1970 film version of King Lear, starring Paul Scofield. And salute on stage and on screen to Peter Brook. And then that guy, Hall of Famer, Joe Turkel. So going through his titles, and I'm saving the best for last, going back to the 1940s with some of his film titles, credits include Man Crazy. He played Tiny in Stanley Kubrick's The Killing. He was a semi-regular Kubrick player. He was also Private Unowned in Paths of Glory. Later appeared in The Purple Gang. Played in Mystery Science Theater favorite Tormented, directed by Bird Eye Gordon. Valley of the Giants and King Rat from 1965. The Sand Pebbles. The St. Valentine's Day Massacre. The Devil's Eight, because the Devil's Dirty Dozen wasn't enough. The Hindenburg from 1975. Which Way Is Up from 1977. But the two things Joe Turkel will always be remembered for is Lloyd the Bartender in Stanley Kubrick's The Shining from 1980 and Dr. Tyrell from Ridley Scott's Blade Runner in 1982. So salute to Joe Turkel. Scary stuff. Good stuff there. And yeah, James Caan, he was 82 and just always there. If you see his interview in Playboy magazine, a guy who was a tough guy but a nice guy at the same time, and you couldn't tell if he was serious or not in certain interviews, but you did not want to mess with him because of his screen persona. But there's also some lovely interviews if you've seen him talking about his son Scott, who's also in the business. Credits go all the way back to the 1960s. With television. Some of the early films of note include Lady in a Cage, played Mississippi and El Dorado. And if you get a chance, Caan was a great storyteller, especially about old Hollywood, and working with the likes of John Wayne and Robert Mitchum. Was in Robert Altman's Countdown, Submarine X1, The Rain People for Coppola, Rabbit Run, Brian's Song, which I mentioned, still a TV movie, but it's still the first film, along with Bang the Drum Slowly, that made it okay for jocks to cry at the movies. And, of course, his one and only Academy Award nomination as Sonny Corleone in The Godfather, which folks have talked about endlessly, and I know a lot of people will be talking about and watching The Godfather this weekend. This, and Caan's probably going to be my, if I was to put in the, later this summer, I wanted to do the Dad Film Hall of Fame, and I think I'm going to put him on the ballot. after The Godfather, it just broke for him. So Slither, Cinderella Liberty, The Gambler, which is one I need to check out, of course, Paul Sorvino's in that, Freebie and the Bean. Gone with the West, Funny Lady, Rollerball, The Killer Elite. He did Rollerball and The Killer Elite in the same year, and that's probably two of the films I'm going to watch this weekend out of respect to James Caan, as well as Thief, which I'll get to in a minute. Silent Movie, Harry and Walter Go to New York, A Bridge Too Far, Another Man, Another Chance, Comes a Horseman. I forgot he was uncredited cameo in 1941, Chapter 2, Hide in Plain Sight, his only directing credit, and still pretty good if you can get your hands on it. Thief, as I mentioned, which was put out on Criterion, kind of slick neo-noirs, one of the early films of Michael Mann. Kiss Me Goodbye, which I remember seeing in the theater. Gardens of Stone, Alien Nation, Dick Tracy. Took Misery. A lot of actors turned down Misery. because they didn't want to be strapped to a bed for 2 hours. And the fact that Kathy Bates obviously won an Academy Award for it. But, man, you need somebody to bounce off of, and James Caan delivers in that. So never forget that. For the Boys, The Dark Backward, anytime he got to, especially later in his career, got to do some comedy, got to poke fun of his tough guy image. Probably one of the best examples of that is Honeymoon in Vegas. And just kept working and worked with Arnold, you know, worked in Dogville. Yes, I'm screening through the scrolling through the IMDb. I think, and it's funny, for my daughter, for my kid, Em, of course, Elf was, and for a lot of kids of that generation, that's their introduction to James Caan, as well as the dad, the voice of the dad in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is the voice of Tim Lockwood. And so, yeah, constantly working, and even if it's stuff I hadn't seen, always working. But I'm happy to say one of his last roles, I, of course, had the screenwriter on. He of course, was Dan Simpson, and brought a nice light touch to Queen Bees, the 2021 comedy. Donald Martin, I, of course, interviewed on the show last year. So, yeah, and also the fact that James Caan, a Jewish guy, got numerous awards from the Italian-American community for his representation in The Godfather. So it's called acting, friends. But, yeah, salute to James Caan. Thank you for your work, sir. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Let's find out. Let's go around the horn, and then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching over the last week. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, on screen one, Thor, Love and Thunder, along with Lightyear. Screen two, Black Phone and Shaun of the Dead. All right. Again, anytime you can watch older titles on the drive-in, that's always good. Screen three, Minions, Rise of Gru and Jurassic World Dominion. And screen four, Elvis and Top Gun Maverick. That's going to be a long evening. So that's at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville this weekend, yes, Minions and Jurassic World. Don't forget the Super Monster Movie Fest is Friday, August 26th at the Skyline Drive-In. Over at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, July 8th and 9th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Hail Fredonia Duck Soup. Really, on a 35-millimeter print, anytime you can watch the Marx Brothers on the big screen, it is well worth the trip. I got to see Horse Feathers and Animal Crackers on a big screen at the local college. Was it U of M Flint, Mott Community College, with my dad when I was a kid. So hopefully you get a big screen Marx Brother experience yourself. Tuesday, July 12th at 10 a.m. is a part of the summer break series, The Prince of Egypt. Friday and Saturday, July 15th and 16th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., from 1947, The Egg and I. Yes, the debut film of Ma and Pa Kettle. So that's happening at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin. We mentioned over at the Can-Can, there was a Hitchcock series going on for them. They have Rear Window running this week. Next week, they will have Gabby Gifford's Won't Back Down. And there is going to be a screening of Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, presented with Women for Change. That is July 13th, if I remember correctly. And so anyway, that is they also have Elvis, Lost Highway, The French, Official Competition. All of that is happening at the historic, at Can-Can in Indy. Also want to mention, at Keystone Arts, they have a retro replay. They'd already started this week, but I want to mention the other three. These are happening on Tuesdays at Keystone Arts. On July 12th, The Hangover. On July 19th, 1973, Terrence Malick's Badlands. Now, I have a Criterion Blu-ray of Badlands, but I've never seen it on the big screen. So if you like early Terrence Malick, where, you know, the films kind of make sense, check out Badlands. And then July 26th, you get another chance to see this on the big screen, so don't miss it, from 2015. Yeah, Mad Max Fury Road. So that is happening as the retro replay series Tuesdays at Keystone Arts. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you've been able to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on Twitter with Cameron, who writes, "The Wind That Shakes the Barley." And that's it on Twitter, so thank you there. We move over to Facebook, and we start with Judy, who writes, When Harry Met Sally needed to revisit a classic. Andrea writes, The Intern and Hustle. Now, I want to emphasize this. When people write Hustle, they mean the Adam Sandler film. I know I was being a wise apple a couple of weeks ago. It's not the Burt Reynolds, Catherine Deneuve film from 1975. It's not Hustlers, the Jennifer Lopez film, or The Hustler, the Paul Newman film. So, more than likely, it's going to be Adam Sandler. I'm 99.99999% certain that's the one they talk about. Although I would like it if it was the Burt Reynolds, Catherine Deneuve, because that film version of Hustle was my introduction to Catherine Deneuve, and thank you. Dan Epstein. I need to get Dan back on the show, but he's very busy. Dan writes, Every Home Should Have One, from 1970. Christian writes, Top Gun, Maverick, Better Than Expected. Jared writes, The Firm, The Pelican Brief, The Rainmaker, and The Lincoln Lawyer. See a trend. Yes, thank you, Jared. Gene writes, The Dry and The Green Knight. David writes, In preparation for Thor, Love and Thunder, I rewatched the previous three Thor movies. Dark World was better than I remembered. All right. Skylar writes, We tried to watch Beavis and Butthead do the universe. Tried being the key word. Okay. Patty writes, The Devil's Disciple and Lightyear. Jamie writes, Hamilton and the Princess. Devin writes, Elvis, Better Nate Than Ever, and Shark Tale. Samantha writes, Mona Lisa Smile. Magnus writes, Men. Stephanie writes, The Incredible Burden of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage. I'm still laughing. Nancy writes, George Carlin's American Dream. So good. Interesting to learn about his inner struggles to find his voice. Sad that we are still fighting the same issues. Yeah, I'm with you there, Nancy. If you watch his 60s stand-up when he's solo or with his partner, it's intriguing stuff. Jerry and Marge Go Large, fun movie, not earth-shattering, but a good story. And Doctor Strange, which she writes, they wear capes, so I'm in. No capes. Oh, Eric. I watched a film grow over the surface of my tear-log coffee. That means he didn't watch anything this week. Hang in there, Eric. It's all right. Cassie writes, The Cursed, and good luck to you, Leo Grand. Amber writes, I revisited two classics, To Catch a Thief and His Girl Friday. Helen would like that. Taylor writes, The Strange One for Noir Alley, Red, Laura, and Funny Face. Mike writes, Lightyear. Jed writes, I always loved Jed Bryan. Of course, he's been on the show. Unlisted Owner was his film that we talked about, but he's always good at visiting stuff, for the first time. I watched two films that are always on my July watch list. First was Gettysburg from 1993. Next was Yankee Doodle Dandy from 1942. Highly recommend both. Spencer writes, Golden Voices. Edward writes, Lightyear. Eric writes, First View, Come On, Come On, which was my number one film of last year. Rewatches The Manchurian Candidate, Ghostbusters, and for Jenny's birthday, Hope Floats and Sliding Doors. And my buddy Scott writes, I don't know whether this will appeal to anyone outside the film industry, although I think all actors should probably see it. It will be a Best Foreign Film contender. He's talking about official competition. And yes, I enjoyed Official Competition. Scooter is reviewed on this program. Next time you're in Indiana, we got to get you to watch Skidoo at the Socies. Amanda writes, Rosemary's Baby, actually displays Rosemary's Baby, Top Gun, Maverick, Elvis, The Americanization of Emily. I need to revisit that again. James Garner, Julie Andrews, Melvin Douglas, The Turning Point, Buffalo Bill and the Indians, the Robert Altman film, White Knights, Giant, and Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Thank you, Amanda. Mary writes, Jaws, my 4th of July tradition. Wow. Christian writes, Captain America, The First Avenger, one of the better Marvel films. Munich, The Edge of War, thought-provoking, but more drama than suspense. Also watched A Life of Speed, the Juan Manuel Fangio story on Netflix. Good doc if you like racing. Thank you. Abdul Hakim Shabazz, who's, of course, been a regular on our show. You can go to WVON.com. He is, of course, one of the voices over there. Didn't know if you knew that. But he and I had a conversation earlier this week about the history of blaxploitation cinema. Why not? Jackie writes, Elvis. Tiffany writes, I watched Guardians of the Galaxy with my mom this morning. She had never seen it before and needed to know where to get, where to get Quill's name. Okay. Thank you, Tiffany. Abby writes, Uncharted, 4 hours in the Capitol, The Soul of America, and The Girl in the Photograph. And then writes, yes, three of those are documentaries. I can tell from the titles, Abby. Thank you. Amy writes, Elvis. Mark writes, Juno. Lou Harry writes, After Yang, The Lost City, and Listomania. Oh, I enjoy Listomania. As the ad campaign puts it, the film that out Tommy's Tommy. It's Ken Russell. It is Roger Daltrey as composer Franz Liszt. They, and of course, it's because it's Ken Russell, there's nothing subtle about the film. He is portrayed as the classical music's first rock star. You see Roger Daltrey riding a giant phallus. Wagner is perceived as Hitler / Dr. Frankenstein. Ringo stars the Pope. Yeah, it's wonderfully bonkers. Kevin writes, CSN and Y, 50 by 4, and Every Night is a Saturday Night, Bobby Keys music documentaries, documentary about Bobby Keys, as well as a documentary about Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Thank you, Kevin. Everin writes, Candyman. David writes, Man on Fire. Missy writes, The Offer, The Godfather Trilogy, Elvis, The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane, whew, Girl 27, and Thor, Love of Thunder. Thank you, Missy. David writes A Quiet Place Part 2 and The Adam Project. Pat writes Thor, Love and Thunder. Jessica writes, I just saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers last night, the 1970s version. So good. Joan writes Mona Lisa Smile and The Lincoln Lawyer. Nick Rogers writes The Princess, You Won't Be Alone, and Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. Kathy writes Suicide Kings. Darlene White writes Father Stew. Richard writes, watch Hustle with Adam Sandler last night. His maturity as a dramatic actor is impressive. This is an excellent movie. With Becky chiming in, he has a wide range as an actor that I didn't expect. He really is great. That's because the Waterboy crowd doesn't see films like Hustle or Punch Drunk Love. So keep at it. Or Spanglish, for that matter. Adam writes, the incredible weight of massive talent. Gary writes, Bedtime Stories, Children of Paradise, Black Boots, Leather Whip, Disney's Hercules, Venom, Ratatouille, and the Mystery Science Theater treatments of The Day the Earth Froze and The Wasp Woman. John writes The Godfather and Rear Window both in their entirety for the first time. Congratulations, John. Good for you. Daniel writes Elvis, Free Fall, Charlie's Aunt, Phantom Lady, Conflict, and The Reckless Moment. JJ writes Elvis, Dario Argento's opera, and Chernobyl, The Lost Tapes. Melissa writes, not one single movie. Whoa. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for chiming in. Joshua writes Endangered, a documentary, and Last Night in Soho. I knew nothing about Last Night in Soho other than it was Edgar Wright, and man, that was a crazy movie. Thank you, Josh. Doug writes, annual July 4th viewing of Yankee Doodle Dandy, as well as Miracle on 34th Street, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and writes, I'd forgotten Alfred Molina was in it. Yes, he is the guide that takes Indiana Jones' whip, but also has a bad ending. Dances with Wolves, Oscar Michu, the superhero of black filmmakers, Space Jam 2, and finished off season 4 of Stranger Things. Michelle writes The Mountain Between Us and A Quiet Place 2. Tony writes The Power of the Dog. Tom writes Busy Week, Invasion of the Star Creatures, American Friends, School Days, Old, A Mighty Wind, and The Sound of Music. Thank you, Tom. Rachel writes The Mummy, Thor Ragnarok, and The Monkey King Reborn. Rob Rio. Fine piano player, Rob Rio. Look up his stuff online. He has a website. Check that out. Rob writes Kimmy from Steven Soderbergh. Drinks with Dee Dee, of course. That happens this week. And this week is the Drinks with Dee Dee episode is devoted to James Caan. But Dee Dee writes Top Gun Maverick, Yankee Doodle Dandy, and The Patriot, because it was July 4th. Carrie writes The Bad Guys and some old Churchill movie. Thank you. Catherine writes Mermaids, Moonstruck, Sense and Sensibility, and Thor. Thank you, Catherine. Aaron writes Tick, Tick, Boom, and had to watch Team America, World Police on July 4th. Aaron's the first one to bring that up. Way to go, Aaron. America, F yeah. Okay. Thank you, Aaron. Kurt writes, Patriot Day for Saturday night at Belle Trace. Of course. Megan writes, Downton Abbey, a new era with my pops. It's his guilty pleasure. Megan, you know, Nigella says, if you feel pleasure, why feel guilty? Just saying. Michael writes, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Independence Day, and The Lost Weekend. Now, there's a July 4th. Sorry, that's terrible. Ashley writes, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Robert Muggy writes, Cinema Paradiso, The Gunfighter, 12 O'Clock High, Downton Abbey, A New Era, and Brian Wilson, Long Promised Road. Thank you, Robert. Wayne writes, The Old Man on Hulu. Andra Faye writes, A Face in the Crowd and Hustle. Nancy writes, Elvis. Beverly writes, Crap, I'm just binge-watching Parks and Rec and also Community. Okay, Beverly, it's all right. First off, I love the exclamation, like you got caught, or you just realized something and you typed it in verbatim. So thank you for that. It's okay. People binge. It's all right. Just never complain about a length of a movie time ever if you're binging television. So... or streaming, whatever. Another Beverly, a different Beverly. This Beverly, Beverly Roche, is going to be in A Midsummer Night's Dream, July 21st through the 24th at Arts for Lawrence, IndieBardFest.com, Arts for Lawrence website. Anyway, she writes, It Should Happen to You. It is fantastic. Stephen Stolen, host of Stolen Moments, which you can hear Sundays and Tuesdays here on WFYI in the evening, writes The Music Man. David writes writes Funny Girl. And Lily gets to take this home. Not going to lie, really enjoyed Father of the Bride, Andy Garcia style, on HBO Max. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got some ideas to watch some movies that are good, or at least, and they're good and new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. I got a feeling this weekend there's going to be a lot of James Caan films for next week's show, including yours truly. So as I said before... Thief, The Killer Elite, and Rollerball are probably what I'm going to go with. So anyway, salute. But thank you, everybody, for your contribution to public radio goodness. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Once again, July 21st through the 24th, A Midsummer Night's Dream, outdoors as a part of Indie Bard Fest, as a part of Arts for Lawrence. So go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information. Hope to see you out there. But yeah, I'm just welding the door shut this weekend. So anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll do this again next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!